Welcome to the Money Advantage Podcast, empowering business owners with the permission to think differently about money so that you can consciously choose to live a meaningful and fulfilled life now. Our passion is making money simple, fun, and doable, helping you feel great about your money and getting your money working for you so you can thrive.
Hi, and welcome back to the Money Advantage Podcast. Today, we're discussing saving. I'm Rachel Marshall, and I'd like to welcome Bruce Wehner to today's show. Thank you, Bruce, for joining me today.
Good morning, Rachel. Savings, isn't that a wonderful thing to do?
It absolutely is, and we are going to dig into why saving today. So I hope you're ready for a great show.
I am. Let's get into it.
Awesome. Well, just kind of in bringing this topic to light, I think sometimes saving doesn't necessarily have the most exciting stigma around it, and we're hoping to change that with today's information that we're going to share. We really look at an environment where we have interest rates on savings accounts and CDs and even bonds really at an all-time low, and for many people, saving seems irrelevant. I've even heard people say they feel like they're putting their half their army is asleep if they're sitting in cash. And we want to look at how we can save in an effective way that makes it feel like our money is still working for us. We also know that right now debt is cheap and easy, so there's been a downswing in savings because people have that access to debt. So there's also a lot of hype in the financial world today, and things like buy this now, this deal's not going to last. And if you see someone make big money in something or some investment, maybe they had a lucky stock pick, you feel like you're missing out if you don't jump on the bandwagon and go ahead and get those returns as well. So everyone feels like they're looking for high returns, and if you're getting anything less, you feel left behind. So in today's episode, we're going to discuss the reasons why the ultra wealthy are comfortable being in cash. They value their ability to have future confidence, peace of mind, and the ability to take advantage of opportunities. They value that especially during a crisis. So their focus is more on building fulfilling quality of life in every category of their life, today and in the future. They value building not only financial abundance, but also mental abundance and protecting their state of mind so that they're always in the most creative, most relaxed, and confident position. It's actually one of their needs, so that they can use their unique abilities to create the most value. So today we're going to learn what they're doing while they prepare for the future, always with that ear to the ground, listening to what's around the corner. So let's talk, Bruce, about what are some of the reasons that the wealthy are comfortable being in cash and why we should as well.
Well, Rachel, I think we've talked about this before. It always, to me, comes down to control. When you have money in a safe place, in a savings environment, and that savings environment, to me, is anything that can be easily converted to cash that you can use in a short period of time and is not at risk of going down. That would be savings to me. So whether you stick it in a coffee can, whether you stick it under your mattress, whether you put it into a bank, whether you put it into a life insurance product that you can access, anything that is can easily be turned liquid, then you actually feel like you're in control. And control gives you that peace of mind. You don't feel desperate. You don't feel like you're missing out on opportunities, and you have the ability to actually project a feeling of abundance and confidence.
Yes, and I can't agree more. I think that abundance and confidence really comes from having some kind of a future guarantee. And Bruce, I really like how you brought out the distinction between saving and investing. And so just to be even more abundantly clear on that, savings is somewhere your money is safe and it's not going to lose value. If you put it there, you know that it's not going to cut in half in terms of its dollar value tomorrow. If you're investing money, you're looking for some kind of a return, but you also have the potential for loss. And so that's really the distinction that we're bringing between saving and investing, and why we really think that saving is valuable is partially having to do with that guarantee that it's not going to drop in value.
Yes. So now, well, let's make one thing clear though, Rachel, because I don't think listeners may see this distinction. You said will not drop in value tomorrow. Long-term savers are being hurt right now because their money is losing buying power to inflation. And so when we're talking about savings, we're not talking about losing it being safe as far as losing buying power. We do realize that it could lose buying power over the years, but we're talking about it cannot lose its actual account value tomorrow. It cannot go down 10, 20, 30, 40%. It can lose buying power into the future, though.
Yes. And Bruce, I really appreciate you bringing that out, because that would be one of the reasons why saving sometimes feels like an antiquated way of thinking about money, because if we know that inflation is going to be in the ballpark of 3% or more every year, and we're not making a return at least as high as that, I think that's one of the main concerns for people saying, what's the point in saving? I'm not at least keeping up with inflation. But we are making that distinction between losing buying power, as Bruce mentioned, having safe money that's not going to lose value in your account. We want that to have a good return that at least keeps up with inflation. But really the point is that we want to make sure we're not just holding a claim to an asset that has the potential to lose dollar value, which that would be investing.
Mm-hmm.
So as Bruce, you mentioned, having that abundance mindset and peace of mind, it really helps you to sleep better at night when you have some sort of guarantees, as opposed to saying the future is completely unknown. I have no idea if my portfolio is going up or down. I have no control over that. That puts somebody really in a precarious position where they feel out of control. And when we're out of control, we don't feel like we can make decisions with that sense of security and certainty and confidence. And so we end up making poor decisions when we're in that state. And so as we value protecting our mindset to maintain our confidence and really our security and certainty for the future, those things are what allow somebody to be able to produce the greatest in their business. And that's why savings is a huge, almost abundance protection for their mindset.
Yes. And it also allows, we talk about sequence of returns in our industry, but it's also important to talk about sequence of distribution. And this is what gets people in trouble a lot of times in their investing accounts, is they are taking a set amount off of, let's say, $100,000, and they're hoping to maintain that principal. So they take 4% off of it, or $4,000 a year, but then it's invested in one particular year, it loses 20%. So now they have to make a decision. Should I continue to take 4% off, and that would only be $3,200, but if I wanted to get my $4,000 off like I did the last couple of years, then what I'm going to be doing is actually eating into the principal even more, so the rate of return would have to be higher to return to $100,000. People that have money into a cash position then could lower their amount that they take off of their investment accounts and then augment that or supplement that with money from their cash accounts until their investment accounts then rebound. So sequence of distribution is just as important as sequences of return.
Oh, that's great. And I really appreciate you sharing that here as well. It gives you the ability to say, regardless of what my investments do in the future, I know that I have a place that I can fall back on to get that capital instead of depleting or dipping into my principal.
Correct.
So also when we look at the earning years and the time frame that we're doing our productive work, we want to be in a position where we have the ability to focus on the right opportunities. And I think all too often in business, if we are operating from a position of scarcity and fear, we're looking to take on any client that might not necessarily be the right one for us. And so sometimes we have that mismatch where we'll settle for taking on business that's really not our unique ability or not what is going to produce the greatest value for our lives and for our client's life. Is there anything that else that you'd want to share kind of around that, some ideas or ways that sometimes we get desperate and make poor choices when we don't have that abundance mindset?
No, I think this is this happens to everybody, even in business, where revenues go down, and instead of sticking to their core principles, they start adding different services to their business, and those different services take away from their savings, and then it also takes away from the focus on the other parts of the core business. This actually happened to me when I was running my auto repair business in the early 2000s, where we started the war in Iraq, and I lost a lot of customers because I had a military-based customers. And so my response to that was to try not to let go of any of my employees, but to try to build revenue up by adding a service. Adding that service, though, took $50,000 out of my particular savings account for my business. And what I did not the unintended consequences were that I was then training my employees on this new service that they were not even near capable of doing. It was taken away from their expertise in other service, and it did not produce the revenue to pay for that $50,000 piece of equipment. So that was an example, I think, a real life example for myself, where it was what I felt like desperate times because I had lost 20% of my revenue from the military people that had to go over to Iraq. And I made a poor decision at that time. So those are the kind of things I think we're talking about as far as people making poor decisions in times of desperation.
Oh, absolutely. And so just coming back to that example, Bruce, how do you feel that maybe things might have been different for you in your business and the choices that you made if you'd had a significant pile of reserves that you could have leaned on during that time of lower income? What would that have changed for you?
Well, I think what I should have done is I should have added services more in my core area and expanded what I was doing in my core area. Instead of what I ended up doing is I bought a machine instead of just staying in my general service area. I bought a machine to actually do mufflers in the automotive industry, which we had never done before. I should have used that money to actually do more advertising, do more value-added services, and I could have kept my core business at least near the same rate. But then what happened was I depleted my savings account and revenues continued to go down, so I had to eventually leave or let go really good employees anyway. If I would have stuck to my core business and not spent that $50,000, I could have spent maybe $20,000 on an advertising campaign and still would have had $30,000 additional in my reserves to maintain my employees. Once the revenues came back up 3-4 years later, I had to then go look for new employees and train them again, which I would have still had those previous employees that were good employees and I had already trained. So I was just spinning my wheels in the mud, trying to go forward again because I had a low amount of capital in my business because I spent it in times of desperation.
Sure. So not only the lesson I'm seeing from this being have the reserves, but then also find a way to stay within your core business, your core competency, your core skills, build that up as opposed to spending additional capital to start something new in those challenging times and really protect and preserve that capital so that you have something to fall back on and have that cushion for your abundance mindset.
Yeah, I believe that you should expand what you're doing, but I think you should most of the time people don't do it when they're actually doing well. They think, well, why should I change and grow when I'm doing well? And actually that is the time to change and grow, is when you're doing well. So having the cash in prosperous times allows you to continue with your abundance mindset and prosper even further. Having cash in desperate times allows you not to make any rash decisions. So I think it benefits in both times of prosperity and times of desperation.
I think this really connects in with another idea here, that we want to be in a position where we're not looking at just chasing a return or a financial outcome, but we're really focusing on value creation. And I think this kind of highlights what you were just sharing in that example as well, is that as we look to say, how can I give the greatest value to my clients within my core set of skills mm-hmm. that I have with the resources I already have, and how can I maximize those resources most effectively to maximize that value? Then we're not just looking at how do I make money, how do I make a financial return, but how do I really impact people as greatly as possible? And so I think when we have that mindset that is fostered and bolstered by having reserves, it really allows us to focus on value creation.
Yes, and value creation is actually the number one thing that will keep a business going through both prosperous times and desperate times. So if people would focus on that instead of returns, I think that would be something that would be the thing that would push every business forward in good times and bad.
I think also having capital reserves or having savings allows you to rebuild if you lose everything. And I have to say, through listening to countless stories through other podcasts that I've heard, listening to entrepreneurs, listening to successful people who have made it at some point in their business and their life, it's amazing how common the theme really comes up, that they've had significant failure and loss at some point in their life. And they've chosen to see it in a positive way and say, hey, here I learned a lesson from this failure, and things didn't go as they planned or as I planned. It didn't work out for me right away. I didn't have the quick success. But what I was able to do is take this learning and this feedback from that failure event and say, now I can rebuild. I can move forward because of what I've learned. And capital that you have in savings allows you to cross that bridge much more easily.
Yeah, those failures, I often say, are real life MBAs. So yes, here in St. Louis, we are fortunate to have one of the best university MBA programs at Washington University in St. Louis. But that program will cost you about $100,000 to go through. So if you can limit your losses to $100,000 or less, I think you actually get a real life MBA on how things don't work and how things do work in the real life and not just theory. So people shouldn't beat themselves up from failures, but they also need to know when to quit an endeavor, and you shouldn't quit it. You should not quit only after all your capital is exhausted, because having that capital then can actually help you regroup, start either something different or actually start a different component of your business so that you can thrive into the future.
That's awesome. And I like to call that pivoting. I think a lot of times it's not necessarily that a failure meant that everything is lost. It means that there's some kind of pivot or directional change needed, whether it's in the messaging or the marketing or the application or the process or the way that you might be going about something. It's usually not that we're completely far off in terms of what skill we have to be able to serve the world with, but I think sometimes we don't get it out there correctly the first time. And I guess I also say this to encourage you, if you are in business, that two things. One, when things are going well, as Bruce was mentioning earlier, and you're in those times of prosperity, you want to be thinking, this isn't a forever state. This is, I have the possibility to go up and down in my life. And if I did have a position where I lost income in the future, or I lost this business, how would I rebuild? And so it's really securing that savings and building capital reserves during those prosperous times, as Bruce was talking about, to prepare for whatever may have a transitional moment in the future. And I don't say that to cause fear or trepidation in any way, but I think knowing that hard times are a part of almost every successful person's life, and that usually those challenges just serve to make them stronger, can help us to anticipate a potential challenge in the future and be prepared for that instead of saying, oh, it will never happen to me.
Yes, and there's countless examples of this happening. And some of the most, you know, glaring ones is people used to have regular cameras all the time. And, you know, Kodak was one of the most successful companies in the United States. And they did not see the digital camera coming, where you'd actually have a phone that would take better pictures than the Kodak camera. And so they just continue to prosper. But yet in the really since about 2008, that whole industry has been turned upside down. And so if they were not able to really survive very well because they did not probably have the capital reserves to change into the digital world very quickly. That's on a big scale, but on a small scale, it happens all the time. Whether it's a small business down the street that has a larger corporation come into the area, and a lot of times business owners will say, "Well, I lost my business because so and so came in. This big box store came in." But really, what they should have been asking themselves: did I lose my business because of that, or did I lose my business because I didn't have the capital reserves to continue to innovate going forward and add value to my current clients' lives?
Oh, absolutely. And I'd like to quote Kim Butler here. I'm not sure if I have the exact quote in front of me, but she talks about that capitalization is the key to helping businesses stay in business, and undercapitalization is usually the cause and a result as well of failing businesses. And so capitalization is a huge piece of being financially prepared for anything to happen. I also, in the show notes, will list that actual quote out and credit that back to Kim Butler. I also wanted to share just some common stories that you might be familiar with. I'm sure you may have come across these before, but Albert Einstein was unable to speak till he was 4 years old and wasn't able to read until age 7. His teacher said he would never amount to anything. And now here, those were his failures early on in life. And now we look back and say Albert Einstein was one of the greatest minds and people who ever lived. And then we look at Oprah Winfrey was demoted as a news anchor because she wasn't fit for television. So we look at the failure event happening at some point for very successful people. And I could go on. Walt Disney as well was fired from a newspaper for lacking imagination and having no original ideas. So imagine that if Walt Disney had given up. And again, the list could just go on and on. But there's so many people who we can look at as saying they're successful now, but they were willing to go through those challenges and the failure timeframe. And I want to share one more thing just kind of on this idea of failure. This was from an article just recently that Stephen Palmer had put out, and he is an authentic purpose coach. He has a weekly inspiration newsletter, and this was a lesson called, or a blog post that he called the compost lesson. And this gardener was talking about compost, and it was just very interesting. Here's the quote. He said, "You see, nature uses death and decay to create life. All the green, vibrant, living plants you see in my garden are a direct product of death. Nature wastes nothing. She does not waste energy lamenting the death of any of her living creatures. Rather, she uses every part of them to create more life. She understands that without death, there would be no life. All stages of the process are codependent on each other." And so he goes on to talk about how understanding how to fail well is what actually allows us to truly succeed. And so the reason I really wanted to spend some time on that failure concept is just that, one, we don't want to fear it. We want to be prepared for how we may go through it in the future. Or maybe you've already gone through your significant failure event and you're just headed up from here, and that is even very exciting. but we just want to allow you to be prepared for the best of times and the worst of times.
Yes, I'm actually a biology major, so that's called conservation of energy. And nature's does it very, very well. So my wife and I do like nature, but she cannot stand to watch nature programming on television because they often show a predator eating a prey. And she goes, I just don't know. I just don't understand why that happens. And I said, well, that's because the predator would actually die without taking advantage of the prey. And unfortunately, this happens occasionally in business where some person does not create value in a great enough way to stay in business. So somebody else that creates value overtakes that person's clientele. That would be like a prey and a predator situation. So if that person that did not create value sees that and adjusts to that and actually creates more value for people, well, then they become a predator into another market or back into the original market, and then they survive. So savings is the strategy that can actually help you innovate and go forward with increased value creation for your clients.
That's exactly right. And I think as we protect that abundance mindset, that ability to really use our gifts most effectively, that allows us to stay in that entrepreneurial mindset of always innovating and always saying, how can I improve? How can I pivot what I'm currently doing? How can I serve more effectively or add on? Maybe it's adding on a digital marketing product, or maybe it's adding on another stream of income. I see this as well, just in the idea of saying, how can I find ways for my capital to produce for me? And so this is kind of the next step that we'll talk about in the future. But when you have reserves, you're able to put those reserves to work, as opposed to just having your only source of income coming from that job. And then if you do have that failure event, then you have lost all sources of income. And that's a scary and risky position to be in as well. And so not only do the reserves protect your state of mind, but they allow you to use that capital to do something with that produces passive income, which then bolsters and supports your financial freedom.
Yeah, Connor Capps, one of my associates, and I, we're trying to help people understand that although your core income is great, you really should try to establish 7 different sources of income. And it would be what we call diversification of income. So it's interesting that the investment world talks about diversification, but when we're talking about our cash flow awareness, we talk about the cash that's coming in, but we don't diversify the cash that's coming in. So if a business could have 7 different sources of income, that would be a great way to diversify and minimize risk. It's very interesting also, we see businesses fail because they're undercapitalized and they only have 1 or 2 great clients. I have a printing company that is really hurting right now because their number one client was Panera Bread, which is just thriving across the United States. And they were printing all the material for Panera. And I don't have the exact numbers, but I believe one of the salesmen said it was about 80% of their revenue. Well, then Panera decided to actually take that in-house and establish their own printing company. So they went from 80% of revenue down to 20%, and they were scrambling to try to recover, and they were undercapitalized. So diversification of income also will allow you to take some of that income and put it into capital reserves, just like people think that diversification in investments allows you to weather the storm of up and downs in the investment market.
Oh, Bruce, that's a great story. And I think really highlights and accentuates the same point that I was making, that I actually heard Chris Miles of Money Ripples just talking about on one of his podcasts earlier this morning. But yes, having diverse income sources that's not dependent just on your income from your job, even if you are that business owner, as Bruce mentioned. So thank you for sharing that, Bruce. Mm-hmm. So also we look at cash is king, especially in a crisis. And so this comes into the idea that opportunity seeks liquidity. And that's kind of a mouthful to say, but what I mean when I share that is that there are opportunities around us all the time. Innovations, inventions to be created, new ways of thinking. And when we are in a position of being able to have that capital to deploy and leverage into an opportunity, it's amazing how many opportunities we'll find. So we see the world differently when we have capital to deploy. This allows us then to think about savings as not just being an emergency fund. I think a lot of times we get frustrated or short-sighted when we think all I'm saving for is just an emergency fund, and we limit that and say, well, it is only needing to be $1,000. Personally, I think a savings for emergencies needs to be between 6 and 12 months of expenses that you have so that you would be able to handle 6 to 12 months of your lifestyle without having income. But on top of that, we want to continue saving for an opportunity fund. And this is building up the reserves and liquidity to be able to deploy and put into opportunities. There's a famous quote by Baron Rothschild, and he said, when there's blood in the streets, or buy when there's blood in the streets, even if the blood is your own. So this allows you to, even in a crisis, when all of the assets in a certain category maybe are going on sale, whether it's the housing market has crashed and you're looking at the property values dropping, if you're the one with the capital, you're then able to find the greatest deals that are going to have the greatest upswing. And again, I want to highlight, if this is your area of knowledge and control and your expertise, then you are able to use that crisis moment to be able to deploy your capital into that opportunity and have great return from it. And again, Rothschild made a fortune buying during the panic that followed the Battle of Waterloo against Napoleon. And you can look that up to find a little bit more about that story. But that's where that quote originally came from, and just highlights the point that if we have liquid capital, we're then able to take advantage of opportunity.
Yeah, this an example of this just came up yesterday in a networking event with a person that I met. He's actually a clothier that I was talking to, but he has two brothers that are lawyers, and they were just having a casual conversation at a dinner event. And one of his brothers says to him, because they were making small talk, and he says, "Hey, what are you working on?" He goes, "Well, it's kind of sad." He goes, "I'm working on a bankruptcy of this liquor store, and I really feel sorry for the people." And I'm sure it was because of being undercapitalized. And he was telling his brother about this. And he goes, "Well, what would it take for them not to be to go into bankruptcy?" And he said, "Well, they'd have to have somebody pick up, you know, some of their debts. We could probably negotiate pennies on the dollar and so on and so forth." And he goes, "Well, I'd be interested in buying the liquor store." So what ended up happening, this was a great ending for both parties. The person that owned the liquor store did not have to go through bankruptcy, and then the brother was able to purchase the liquor store at pennies on the dollars from the creditors, and everybody was happy. The creditors got more money than they would have gotten if it would have went into bankruptcy. The sellers did not have to go through the pain and embarrassment of bankruptcy. And the clothier, the brother that had the capital available, he was actually able to purchase a business for pennies on the dollar, and now he has a thriving business. So having that capital to, we have a mutual friend, Rachel, Jimmy Vreeland. He calls it mm-hmm. he calls it dry powder. So when you have mm-hmm. this dry powder that you can initiate and explode it into an opportunity, then most of the time you benefit.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the powerful reasons that we're highlighting again in this episode today, the why of why do we want to have liquid savings in a world that doesn't seem to value having liquid capital because of those low interest rates you're gaining on savings and the cheap availability of debt. these are the powerful reasons why having liquid capital is so valuable to you, why great investors and ultra wealthy people are using these strategies, and why you can implement that in your own life starting now as well. I want to share as well some of the strategies that often will create a false kind of confidence that are sometimes more quickly and readily accepted. And I want to differentiate something real quick here between a strategy and a principle. It's very similar to the difference between a need and a strategy. So if you have a need for capital, one strategy to do that would be to maybe say, well, I'm just going to budget more effectively. It's the same thing as saying the principle is that you want to have financial freedom. And the strategy to accomplishing that is to say, I'm just going to get really tight with my budgeting. I'm going to scrimp and save. I'm going to figure out how I can eat rice and beans, or, you know, shrink my cost of groceries and never eat out and
take a bicycle. And live a,
right, right, exactly. Or ride public transportation. But budgeting doesn't create confidence. So while you might be spending less of the dollars you earn today, it's not a true financial freedom strategy for accomplishing what you want in the future. If you had a wonderful budget, even if you're only spending very little of your income, if you lost all your income, your savings is what carries you forward. It's sometimes the budgeting is what is a starting point to get to the savings, but the savings and having a plan in your life for savings is what will carry you through the crisis, not the fact that you had a great budget.
Yeah, I don't even like the word budget. I think that it's a, when you talk to a client about the word budget, it's, they cringe. And the reason they cringe is because budgets tell you what you can't have. And that's just the bottom line.
Absolutely.
You can't spend it on this. You can't spend it on that. If you have a cash flow awareness and awareness of where your money is going, then you can make decisions. And your strategies you're talking about are based on your principles of what you're trying to get accomplished. So just having an awareness of where your money is being deployed is very, very valuable.
Absolutely. And Bruce, that's one of the things that we will be talking in a future episode much more in depth about, how cash flow awareness then plays into savings so that we can have more additional income to be able to use and put aside for savings so that we can put it into this financial system. The other thing I want to highlight is that a lot of times we look to this strategy of paying off debt as the thing that creates confidence. And we get this idea that if all my debt is paid off, I'm financially free. But the challenge is, if you were in a position where you had no liabilities and no debt to pay, but you lost your source of income, that's not going to sustain you. The fact that you have no loan payments outstanding will not allow you to eat and be able to still have a good quality of life. You still will have expenses going forward, even if your house is paid off and your car is paid off and your student loans are paid off and your credit card is paid off, but you can't afford food because you have no income. That's not a position that creates financial freedom. It's truly having the capital and savings that creates that confidence for the future. And so I kind of want to shift that mindset and shift the needle from the idea that having all my loans paid off is what creates freedom for me, to really recognizing that having that capital that you control is what really creates that freedom and the confidence for the future, that no matter what happens, if you did have an unexpected failure event on your horizon in the future, that that pile of liquid capital, not even, I don't want to allude to it as a pile, but that liquid capital, those reserves are really what's going to create that confidence for you.
Yes, this comes up all the time in talking to both individuals and business owners about, I don't want to be in debt. I don't want to be in debt. I don't want to be in debt. And I agree with that in basic principle, but the strategies of how you eliminate your debt is, I think, what you're talking about. If you eliminate your debt without having a savings plan in play, what's interesting is, if you lose your business income or you lose your personal income, and you do need to actually go out and get a a loan from somebody, whether it's a bank or whether it's an individual or whomever, the first thing they're going to ask you is, what is your capital and what is your income? So if you now have no income and you have no capital, you have no way to recover from that situation. If you have income but no capital, you can recover. And if you have capital but no income, you can recover. But if you have no capital, no income, and no debt, there's really no place to turn to recover.
Bruce, that's powerful. And I think that was a very easy to understand way of explaining that, and that we can all wrap our mind around and really be able to grab onto. I want to share, kind of as we're wrapping up this segment, on why to have liquid capital. A couple things. One is that we want to keep a store of money that you add to every year, so that when assets go on sale, when a crisis happens, when the right opportunity presents itself, you have the capital to be able to deploy for that. I want to speak real briefly to this idea of being able to improve your quality of life even now and not just have to scrimp and save. When you are saving, part of that savings should be set aside for 100% no regrets fun. This is really something that, whether it's a vacation, whether it's a staycation, whether it's some time that you do something for yourself, when you set money aside and you say, this is planned to be able to spend specifically for me to enjoy life today, you're able to live in a better state of abundance with clarity and peace of mind, as opposed to saying, well, I'm just going to have to delay all of those type of things until I somehow someday make it 20 years from now, and then I'll enjoy life. And so when you have a clear savings plan in your life, you're able to pay yourself first. You're able to also have some money that you're using specifically to enjoy life now. The other thing I just want to share is that four reasons to save is that we don't know what future taxes will look like. If taxes were to increase, we want to be able to accommodate that in our life. We don't know what future inflation will look like, and it could be higher than expected. And if so, we want to make sure that our reserves will handle that as well. There's also planned obsolescence. So this is things like, we know that computers and technology is being created fresh and new all the time, knowing that the computer you bought 20 years ago, or even the one you have today, is not going to last you 20 years into the future. You're going to have to continue to update with the technology changes. And then just technological advances in general. So things like, like you mentioned Kodak. In the days of Kodak, when we were developing our film strips and our negatives, we couldn't have even fathomed that there would be an iPhone that would take higher quality pictures and that we would have them all digitally in our hand. And we would have so many of them that we would fill up the space on our phone and have to save them somewhere in the cloud. Right. But now with the changes of the world, we look at, that's almost something that you feel that you need in order to maintain a quality of life, because the changes have happened so greatly that you can't necessarily foresee what types of products will be available in the future that will add to the quality of life that you want to have.
I actually call that technological inflation, when there's both new technological advances and planned obsolescence.
Oh, that's awesome. So Bruce, is there anything else that you would like to bring to the table about this subject of why have savings and why we want to model what the wealthy are doing before we kind of bring this to a close today?
Well, what I think what you have to really say to yourself is, when we're talking to business owners, are you an entrepreneur or are you a business owner? If you are a business owner, what you may look at is, I really am looking at an endpoint in my business and I'm getting out. And when you do that, you may actually be in a scarcity mindset, so that you're putting money into other places outside your business and you're not actually taking care of a savings component that can actually help you through poor times, much like that liquor store example that I gave later or earlier on in the broadcast. If you're an entrepreneurial mindset and you're saying to yourself, instead of putting money into an investment account outside because I have this goal to sell my business and get out because it's just a business to you. It's not a breathing entity that's constantly changing. You're actually going to put money into a savings component so that you can constantly grow your business and take advantage of opportunities. Those are two really big distinctions on your mindset. Some business owners don't even realize they have that mindset. I have said this in a business owner conference before. I ask business owners that are putting money away into investment accounts instead of savings accounts. I ask them why they're doing that, and they say, "Well, it's because I want to sell my business and I want to get out." And I ask them why, and they say, "I'm just really tired of my business." Well, that's because they're working in their business and they're not working on their business. And so they're doing parts of their business that they are really not happy about. They need to shift their mindset so that they stop taking that money and putting it to investment accounts. When I ask them how much they hope to make on the investment accounts, they say, well, they're hoping to get 5 or 6%. When I say to them, what if somebody handed you $100,000 right now and you try to add more services to your business, how much do you think you can increase your revenue with that $100,000 if you had that to employ? And oftentimes they will say anywhere between 15 and 25%. I try to just be quiet at that time and let them reflect on what they just said. They'd rather take $100,000, put it into a place where they're not actually responsible for its growth and hope to get 5 or 6%, but they could take $100,000 from that and put it into their business, and they believe they can get between 15 and 25%. To me, it all comes down to mindset, because an entrepreneurial thinking person would not put his money into a place where he cannot deploy it. He would save it because he does have the mindset that I would rather be responsible for using that savings to get 15 to 25% return in my own business that I'm responsible for than to hand it over to somebody else that I am not able to use in times of crisis without severe penalty. And in some cases, you cannot even touch it if you're still in business. And it is at risk at not even being there for a rate of return into the future. So that's, I think, the in closing of how we are really looking at savings as a mindset for business owners.
Oh, absolutely, Bruce. And I really appreciate you sharing that. So today we discussed the reasons why the wealthy value and hold cash, and how by attuning your thinking to this mindset of setting yourself up for long-term success, not just a quick win, you can make the same decisions. So it's all about connecting with a why. Our why is a powerful motivator. It's the reason that keeps us committed, even during challenges, even when we don't see the results that we're looking for right away in business. It keeps us motivated through adversity. Having a clear picture allows you to build peace of mind and confidence. It's a shelter from you needing to be desperate. It allows you to build a better future, and rather than just having an emotional success reaction today.
Yeah, I agree with that, Rachel. And I'd like to now tell the people what you really need to do is take action. So from this podcast, we hope that you take a moment to reflect and write out why you're in business. Why do you want to build financial freedom? Why do you want to be successful? What is the vision for your future life that you want to create? We think it's important to put that in a visible location so that you can see it every day and read it as part of your daily success routine. It's important, too, if you share your vision, share your thoughts, share your comments. If you want to do it, you can do that on our blog. And then other people can benefit from your thoughts and comments. make sure you tune in next week, and we'll cover some specific examples and stories to help you see how these principles are playing out live in action and in the real world today. The upcoming episode is Why the Wealthy Love Cash, Part 2.
Awesome. Thank you. And so to get your copy of the ebook Credit Mastery, Why a Great Credit Score is a Ticket to Cash Flow and How to Make It Happen, you can text CREDIT1, that's C-R-E-D-I-T, 1, to the number 44222. Again, the number is 44222. This guide will help you to improve your personal credit score to qualify for lower interest rates and lower payments on your loans, which will also then lower your monthly expense and increase your cash flow. You can see the show notes or go to themoneyadvantage.com for details. You can also go to themoneyadvantage.com where you can subscribe to our podcast. And if the conversation is valuable to you, please rate and review us on iTunes. Also, please join the Money Advantage community to get emails about our podcasts, blogs, videos, and tools that will be helpful to you. And if you had any particular questions about something we touched on today or savings in general that we've discussed, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at hello@themoneyadvantage.com to share your thoughts, feedback, or any particular questions you have. And you can also request a free financial picture conversation that will help you to discover dollars flowing out of your control, strategize ways to get more money flowing back into your control so that the end result is having more money for you to retain and utilize during your lifetime, and also more to pass on to future generations. We really appreciate you listening to this podcast today, and we hope it was educational, empowering, and added value to your life and business. So again, this is Bruce and Rachel. Special thanks to you, our listeners, and we can't wait to come back and share another topic on the podcast with you very soon. Until then, follow the wealthy few, not the crowd, and build a life and business you love. To learn how high-performing entrepreneurs 10x or more returns on liquid capital without giving up quick access to cash, go to themoneyadvantage.com/liquid-capital to get The Unfair Advantage, your 20-minute, easy-to-read guide on maximizing your savings.
Thank you for listening to the Money Advantage Podcast. Today's show notes and resources are available for you on themoneyadvantage.com. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe and leave a review. If you have any questions or desire to speak with a qualified financial professional after listening to today's podcast, we encourage you to reach out to us at hello@themoneyadvantage.com or check us out at themoneyadvantage.com. The opinions and views expressed here are for informational purposes only. This material is educational in nature and should not be deemed as a solicitation of any specific product or service. All investments involve risk and a potential loss of principal. Kalos Capital Incorporated nor Kalos Management Incorporated offer tax or legal advice. Please consult with a tax advisor or attorney for advice regarding the impact on your portfolio. Securities offered through Kalos Capital Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC, MSRB, and investment advisory services offered through Kalos Management Incorporated and registered investment advisor, both located at 11525 Parkwood Circle, Alpharetta, Georgia. E3 Consultants Group is not an affiliate or subsidiary of Kalos Capital Incorporated or Kalos Management Incorporated.